You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
Welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Gobble, gobble. I hope you all had a fantastic Thanksgiving Day weekend. We're back. Episode 156 of the Fanboy Garage. Thank you guys for coming back to us for another show, another episode. Lots to discuss. Chris and I have both seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, so we'll dig into that. Talk a little bit about the box office. Let's see, Hawkeye dropped two trailers, so we'll talk a bit
about two episodes.
Two episodes, and we're getting closer and closer to Spider Monday, which is the day you're probably listening to this episode, so I hope you guys got your tickets for Spider-Man No Way Home, but let's dig into the box office, and then we'll kind of transition into Ghostbusters.
Yeah, we could do this quick, because there's really not much at this point going on. I mean, the number one movie this weekend was Encanto, which is the new Disney animated...
Encanto?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Which is the new Disney animated film, $27 million. You know, it's the first Disney Studios animated film to be released exclusively in theaters since November of 2019, when Frozen 2 came out.
Quite a big deal.
Yeah. And so that was number one, which is interesting. I mean, it got really great reviews, and it did the word of mouth on it is really strong. But, you know, family films have not fared very well at the box office so far in this, like in what I'll call like this phase of the pandemic era. Right. When people actually are going to theaters. So hopefully this is a return to form. I mean, it's clearly not doing the type of numbers. I mean, it did $40.3 million over the 5-day. Mm-hmm. So it's not doing the kind of numbers that, you know, major Disney animated films would normally do, but it's certainly an improvement over what's come before. In second place, though, was Ghostbusters Afterlife, which we are going to talk, I guess, a lot about in this episode. It had a really strong second week hold. I mean, well, it 44.3% drop. So it did $24.5 million for the 3-day, and $35.25 million for the 5-day. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good hold. I mean, of course, we knew the word of mouth on this was really strong. Mm-hmm. And we obviously, we didn't go see it over the weekend. Well, but we did go see it during the week. And clearly it worked for us. So, obviously it held up pretty well. And also what helped this movie is that it didn't lose a large portion of its premium screens. So like IMAX and stuff like that, mainly because it's only the major competition was a family film, which is usually not going to, you're not going to hit that market. So that was a stronghold for them. So there right now, it's at $87.8 million. So it's, it's doing really well. It's going to do over $100 million domestic. I think that's a healthy number. And who knows how much more than that. I mean, right now, look, it's still early.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, there's not a lot coming out, right, over the next few weeks until Spider-Man, So
yeah, you got your West Side Story.
Which is different audience. And those movies, those musicals have not done well at all at the box office in the pandemic era. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Also, just the only other thing really notable, well, I guess a couple little notable things. One was Eternals was, I think, surprised because, last week we talked about how it had dropped 60% or more in its second and third weeks. And this weekend it did 28.7% drop. It's like out of nowhere. It's like, well, how did that happen? So it did 7.9 million for the 3-day. And, it... at $11.4 million for the 5-day, and now it's over, you know, $150 million in North America and like $368 million worldwide. And it's like all of a sudden, you know, I don't know if this weekend was an anomaly or if it maybe is starting to find some legs. But that's, you know, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because if it does find some legs here with very little competition, you know, for a few weeks, if it can hold at a similar level, assuming it's not going to be losing a lot of screens and all of that stuff, then, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, look, it's still going to be way behind Shang-Chi and Black Widow. And Black Widow obviously had the day and date premiere access release. But, you know, a week ago with those drops, I mean, if it continued at that pace or at a, not that it was going to keep dropping 60%, but, you know, if it was going to drop maybe 40, 50% this week, like all of a sudden you're starting to think like, hey, maybe this movie is going to struggle to even get to 150 million domestic. Right. And now all of a sudden with this kind of surprising week, it's already over 150, and you never know. I mean, if this isn't an anomaly and this, it does continue to hold around this level, I mean, look, maybe it gets to 160, 165 domestic, and now it's a little bit more respectable.
Yeah, it's a shoulder shrug with a smile.
Sure. You know, and, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, maybe it can get to, I don't know, I still don't know that 400 million worldwide, I guess it's possible. You know, let's see how it holds, though. That's going to be the key. And we already have one movie that's DOA, which was Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. You know, another attempt, not another, but an attempt to reboot that franchise.
Yeah, I don't even.
And supposedly, you know, it was this was their way of trying to appeal more to the video game. It's supposed to be closer to the video games than the Mila Jovovich franchise was. You know, those movies made money regardless.
Overseas,
you know,
right?
They made money. They did all right here, too. I mean, you know, relative to budget. I mean, I haven't, you know, checked out all of the numbers for that series. But, like, I mean, they made a lot of them, you know, and usually you don't make a lot of those types of movies unless they're making, you know, they're making your studio some kind of money. You know, it was a, here, so let's see. So the first Resident Evil movie did, I mean.
That movie was made in like 1946.
In 2002, yeah. 20, almost 20 years ago. 40 million domestic, 102 million worldwide. And again, you know, these weren't like big budget movies. Mm-hmm. You know, the last movie was, well, not the last, but I guess Resident Evil, was it, oh, jeez, look at this. Was it Resident Evil Vendetta? No, that's an animated movie. So I guess Resident Evil Retribution, I don't even know, I can't even, but I know like here, Resident Evil Extinction, which came out in 2007, made, you know, $147.7 million worldwide box office. I mean, look, the franchise was, it was a horror franchise, you know, that was fairly successful. Now it's not, you know, it's like you're trying to reboot something that nobody really asked for. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, I mean, here, according to this, the film series, the total box office. Now, I don't know what this is based on, because this doesn't seem right. It's saying $1.2 billion on a $313 million budget, but I don't know.
All in, across the board?
Yeah.
There was a lot of films, right? There's like five?
I mean, well, there's the first one. And yeah, one, two, three, four, five, six. Okay, so, yeah. So,
kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So that's why they keep trying. But, yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, I know overseas they crush.
Yeah. Well, not now.
Well, not anymore. But, you know. Milo Jovic, whatever her last name is,
Jovovich, yeah. Well,
Jovovich.
Yeah. Her husband is, I believe she's married to Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah.
Who directed that series. And the
power couple right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, the Resident Evil, the final chapter. So that was the last one. 2016. That movie did $312 million worldwide.
Yeah.
Only 26 here domestically, but $285 million. Yeah, worldwide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, what are you going to do? All right. Anyway, I assume we're not going to be getting any more of those, so whatever.
God forbid.
Yeah. So we've gone out now. We have both seen Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yes.
And, you know, this was a rare thing for me these days because it is unusual for me to skip a movie in its opening weekend, unless there's some circumstances that prohibit me from seeing the movie in its opening weekend. But for me to consciously choose not to see a movie in its opening weekend, it is rare that I will wind up seeing it in theaters, right? Because usually for me to not see it opening weekend, that means I probably didn't have a lot of interest in it.
Right.
Like I said, unless there were some circumstances that caused me to not be able to see it. So this is a rare thing. I mean, so I was on the fence with this movie during opening weekend. A week before it came out, I was not going to see it at all. Mm-hmm. Not even an option. And then as it got closer and I started to hear people raving about it, I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll go, but I didn't. And then once the word of mouth was like so crazy,
feverish, positive,
like over the weekend, opening weekend, I was like, all right, I'm going to have to go see it. So I checked it out on Tuesday, which worked out perfectly for me because what I didn't know, because I am not usually going to movies on like Tuesday afternoons very often.
Did you get that like discount?
I did, because apparently Regal, if you're a Regal Crown Club member, they have $6.50 movie day on Tuesdays.
Nice.
Yeah. So,
score.
Yeah, so there you go, bang. And that was just an accident. Like, I didn't even know that until I went to hit checkout on the app.
And you're like, sick, wait, what, is this right?
Yeah, and I was like, great. So that made it already worth it. I guess so let me give you, an analogy of how I felt watching this movie. It was like I went out for like a 4-course dinner and the appetizer comes out and it's okay. You know, it's like, all right, it's not bad. It's like, all right, it's fine. And then they bring out like the next course and that's good.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, it's good. It's, you know, but, and then the main course comes out and that's good.
Yeah.
You know? And then the dessert comes out and the dessert is just fantastic.
Yeah. Dude, this is the same experience I had.
Yeah.
Same experience.
And so add it all up.
Like, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Add it all up and that equals a fantastic meal.
Yeah.
And a great experience. And I mean, when that movie, like the beginning of the movie is like, all right, you know, it's a little slow. They're setting up stuff and you're like, all right. And then it starts to get, you know, once it gets a little into like the Ghostbuster-y stuff, it starts to get a little bit better. And then like once it becomes like Ghostbusters,
once they start hunting ghosts.
Yeah. It's real good. Like,
yes, I'm on. Okay, we're doing this. I'm with you.
Absolutely. And then that ended, that final, the whole finale is just like, ugh.
A mess.
I did not, honestly, I was not expecting that.
Did not expect it at all.
Yeah.
Literally, I was like, oh,
I was fighting back.
I'm like, someone's stuffing cotton balls in my throat.
Yeah, I was fighting back the tears.
Oh my God, man.
I mean, I mean, yeah,
I went on Wednesday night at 10.
Wow.
I was exhausted.
Yeah.
I was utterly exhausted. It'd been a long day at work, you know, kind of wrapping everything up. before the break, and then I had like I was going to do boxing on Thursday morning, like bright and early, and the first part of that movie, man, I was like, oh, what is this? This is so slow. You know, okay, I'm like, all right, you guys are setting me up. Okay, is it a ghost? Is it not a ghost? All right, we'll get into spoilers, F it, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
The whole, like, the Egon thing, when they weren't showing his face.
Yes.
I was like, oh, here we go. Okay, they're going to allude to who this is. And, of course, they're not going to show him Harold Ramis died. And I'll be honest, like, I was virtually in the dark on all aspects of this film.
I was, too.
With the exception of what I've seen in the trailers, right?
Yeah.
And like I said in our talk when I first heard about it, or saw the trailer, the like first real trailer, and then I talked a little bit about my experiences at New York Comic Con, I wasn't like excited to see this film. I was, because I felt like they were going to be pulling the chain on the nostalgia too hard and revisiting a lot of the first film. And ultimately, they do revisit the first film in a very, very big way, but they do it with such reverence.
Yes.
That all of that, I mean, we talked about playing the fan service card like the right way, and this film did it perfectly. Executed it perfectly. Like the whole, you know, the setting up of like Egon's granddaughter and her being like very Egon-ish.
Yes, she's great, like, by the way.
Okay. But then, when she started cracking those jokes,
yeah,
I was like, this is actually really good. I really like, I'm really digging her. Like, I'm liking the fact that she's the focus of the film.
Yes,
because I thought it was going to be like, you know, they were going to try to spend time with all of this, the kids.
Yeah, setting up like a team, and like they don't really do that.
Yeah, no. She just commands.
Yes,
the leadership. And I like that a lot. I like that decision a lot. Like, her brother has to fold in, and that kid, you know, podcast.
Yeah.
Has to fold in. Girl has to fold in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I dug that. I dug that big time. But like, yeah, like I said, end of the film. When those hands go around.
Yeah.
Hers to help her control the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And they pan up and they show Egon's face. Yes. Bro. Mess.
I was and
I didn't even expect it. I was like, oh shit.
Yep. I, you know what, I was kind of, so, you know, they were, you know, when you think back, like, they were kind of teasing this, right? Because I, obviously, when you think about it, it's like, well, the movie's called Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's like, okay, so the afterlife, it's symbolic of a number of things in this movie, right? But one of the main things is the fact that, like, the ghost of Egon plays a role. Like, he's communicating with his granddaughter. Like, you know, when she goes down to his lab or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, he's turning the lights on and he's moving. Like, so, like, even though I still wasn't expecting, like, to full-on see it, like, it was earned, the moment, because they kind of build to it. But when it happened, I was like, oh, man. Like, this is hitting me like in all the right places and for all the right reasons. And it's not gratuitous. And then, of course, like for Harold, that just finished me.
Yeah. Like right at the end, I was like, oh my God.
Just as I started to kind of compose myself, that was it. It was like, you're done. Because I mean, I grew up, that's my thing. Like, so while I may not have been like as nostalgic for the Ghostbusters, like I'm a child of the 80s, and I grew up watching Harold Ramis's movies. Like, I adore them, not just the ones that he was in, like the ones that he wrote, the ones that he directed, and obviously the ones that he starred in. And so for me, like, that was so well done. I mean, the other thing about this movie that surprised me a little bit is that this movie, it really feels like an 80s movie, but not in a, like, the way that the original Ghostbusters was. This feels more Spielberg to me.
Yes.
Then, like, Reitman.
Small town, weird occurrences.
Yeah.
Like,
kids trying to figure vibe, out. Yeah. Yeah, like, what's happening and you know.
But, like, that represents the 80s culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big time.
Absolutely.
You know, everything from, like, The Goonies, yeah. Monster Squad. I mean, there's so many films that we can, you know, Cocoon, like, all of that stuff. Even, like, Cocoon is weird, but, like, you know, Cocoon has it.
Cocoon's a little opposite end of the spectrum.
I think love Cocoon.
Yeah, but it's the age. Yeah, but, you know what I'm saying. Yeah, got it.
It's the old people thinking about it. But it's the same concept of, like, sure. Oh, there's something weird going on over here. We gotta go investigate.
Yes.
You know? Is that like, yeah. They take you on the adventure with them.
And yeah,
that's what this film was. You know, absolutely. it was Phoebe, right? That's her name.
Yep.
Phoebe taking you on the adventure of, like, uncovering who her grandfather was.
Yep.
Simultaneously figuring out that, you know, her grandfather, in that discovery, her grandfather was protecting the world from Zool.
Right.
And yeah, Zool. I'm about to say Gozer. But all of that stuff, and then, God, man, and then when the original, the OG guys pop up,
yeah,
felt a little weird. That part was a little jarring for me.
I was gonna say that, especially because the tone shifts, like,
yeah, because, like, it's like the Bill Murray Show,
yeah, and it's kind of like, that's why I say, like, the rest. This movie is kind of like a Spielberg esque 80s. Coming of age story, and then, like, when the original crew steps in, like, and Bill Murray takes over, it's very just like Bill Murray being funny, like doing his Bill Murray comedy and stuff. Murray. And it's a little, yeah. It's very different from the feel of the rest of the movie, but it's not a long sequence. Like, it's like, it's just enough time to kind of bring home that whole moment and then have the Harold Ramis hologram thing pay off.
That Harold Ramis CG,
yeah,
was spot on.
Yes, yep.
And I was looking for, like, are you gonna take me out of the moment? I was looking for it.
Yeah,
like when he, I mean, I don't know how they did it, and I would love to see the behind the scenes, how they brought that back, if they used old footage and then just aged him up,
right?
There was some stuff where I was like, man, that kind of looks like Harold Ramis from part two.
Right.
Just aged a little, obviously aged a lot more.
Sure.
But, like, yeah, and you see him and he smiles and I was like, holy cow, man, this is amazing shit.
Because in the post credits, or was it the first post credits scene where...
No, the first one was with Sigourney Weaver.
Right, that's the Sigourney Weaver one with Bill Murray. The actual post-credit scene is they show, like, I guess, unused footage from the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah, the original Ghostbusters.
So they probably, it wouldn't surprise me if they did find some, you know, footage from that, and they used that as part of the process. You know, and the thing is, too, like, the way it ends, like, with Winston, obviously we learn he's made money, like, he's been a huge successful businessman, and he's going to, like, reopen the firehouse and stuff like that. It's like, you know what? I'm cool. Like, I want to see more of this. Like, I'm cool with seeing, like, Phoebe, and, like, in her character, like, taking up the mantle for this and seeing where they can go. Like, I was that interested in the character. And it's nice too, because, like, you know, there's a redemption story here for a person that's, I guess, technically not really in the movie, which is, like, the Egon character, right? They figured out a way to build a movie around him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so when it starts, like, nobody liked him, right? Like, his family, because he abandoned them. The town people don't like him because they just think he's this weird conspiracy theorist, like, creepy guy.
Yeah. His fellow Ghostbusters are on the outs.
Right. The other Ghostbusters aren't, right, because they... So, like, and then all of a sudden, by the end, it's like you slowly but surely you're starting to realize that, like, he had this greater purpose. And it's nice that, like, the granddaughter who, you know, was kind of following in his footsteps without knowing it.
Yeah.
Like, was the one to basically bring this to light, right? Like, to actually is the reason why he got to have that, like, redemption story. So, like, there's a lot of stuff in this movie. Like, and, like, that's why I say, like, it's got that real, like, 80s feel. And I was pleasantly surprised by that because I was a little concerned that this was going to go more down, like, the Stranger Things route.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I assumed it would be somewhat comedic, you know, clearly, but like, I thought they were going to go more down that route, you know, and kind of like you, like, I thought it was going to be like, okay, they're a team and they're going to, you know, this and that. And it's really not, it's a focused story. And, I mean, the fan service stuff, like, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, most of it was stuff that we saw in the trailers, right?
Right.
Not most of it wasn't all gratuitous. I mean, the only thing that was like maybe the little Stay Puffed Marshmallow Men, like, was kind of what's that all about?
I was
like,
fine with that.
Yeah, but that was whatever. I mean, that was a cute moment. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing, everything else, I thought was it tied into the original. It made sense. It worked within the narrative of this story. Like, it didn't feel forced.
And it actually felt like it belonged with the other Ghostbuster films.
It did, in its own way. Like, the tone feels different, but, like, yes.
There was enough connective tissue there, obviously, with it being Egon and that really. But it's, you know, it's Egon. You know, it's Egon who's effing weird.
Yes.
It's Egon who's socially awkward. It's Egon who's, like, you know, mountains above everybody from a, you know, intellect perspective. And, you know, he's the one who took on this burden for good cause, right? And it even when they bring on the old dudes, it's like, it's so quick, and they don't save the day,
right?
Which is great, because I thought, oh shit, here we go, you know. You're gonna set this chick up to be the Ghostbuster. And then these old heads are going to come in and they're going to steal the show from her. And nope, they get their asses rocked.
Yep.
And she ultimately, you know, ends up defeating Azul. So, hey.
And that was great because it's her story, and it was her and her with her grandfather's help.
With her grandfather.
And that it's really their – this movie is their story. Right? Yeah. Everybody else is just along for the ride or to, you know, fit into a certain thing, right? You know, and even like the Paul Rudd character, who, you know,
total Rick Moranis.
I mean, like, at the end, but like he actually does have like a purpose in that he's the first person to kind of embrace her geekiness and her science side. And, you know, I mean, he's sitting there.
He sees her.
She's sitting there putting on like Child's Play and like, you know, horror movies for the class to watch because he knows they don't care. Yeah. And then he's going in the back and doing like all the fun stuff. I mean, you know. Stuff like that, I mean, was,
the armchair stuff was like a nice little nod to Sigourney Weaver's thing, the whole breathing stuff, like it felt like, oh shit, like she's got that, you know, she got the beast in her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was cool. You know, like I said, it was that all of that stuff to me was awesome. Cause it felt familiar and then new at the same time. So yeah, I can't wait to see that movie again. I can't wait to show it to my wife.
Yep.
You know, I thought it was so good. I came out of that movie like skipping.
Yeah,
like,
I was
late as shit for me. But I was like, man, I feel so good about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, now I was like, now I get it. Like, I could totally see how, you know, people would have left that theater and been like, oh my God. Because, like, I mean, I left that theater just on this emotional high just from, you know, just all of that, everything that the movie did to me, like in that, to the end, you know, in that finale. Yeah. And again, it did that not just because it did it because it earned it. Like, they could have done a similar thing, right? And it could have been unearned and it could have just been gratuitous and all fan servicey, and that wouldn't have resonated. But it resonated because the whole movie builds to that moment. And it pays off. And now, so it's like you're leaving the theater and you're like, man, you know, if you didn't like it, fine. Again, I still haven't, I've yet to see any non-critic that I, you know, that I know that has been commenting on this movie that hasn't loved it.
Mm.
You know, so
yeah, I don't, you know, I don't, I haven't read any reviews about
it. Yeah, I didn't either. I don't really care.
I don't really care. But, yeah. But to me, it's like, man, if you are able to separate yourself that way, because I mean, I imagine if you grew up in the 80s and grew up watching this film, you have to love this movie. Or if you like the film, you know what I mean? Like, there has to be something that feels really good and genuine about the film. I mean, the legacy of it, because Jason Reitman and, you know, Harold Ramis, his family had to obviously sign off to use a likeness of him. Yep. So, you know, that felt good. Getting old guys back, that felt good. You know what I mean? Like, all of those things, they're pulling all of the right levers. And then if you're a critic and you walk out and you're like, that movie sucked, like, screw you. And you must have been born in, like, 1996. Yeah,
well, I mean, and to be fair, I mean, it's not like there's a lot of reviews where it's like, oh, that movie sucked. You know, it's, like, it's not at 20% right. on Rotten. You know, it's still fresh. You know, it's just that, and I guess to critics, the stuff you just mentioned, like, they're not supposed to care about any of that stuff, right? Because they're supposed to judge just purely...
Oh, just on, like, based on the narrative. How's the writing?
Yeah, exactly. So...
You know, is this a story? Is the screenplay original enough? Well, it just kind of steals a lot from the first movie. Well, I bet you guys all loved The Force Awakens.
Yeah. I mean, I don't... Just for me, I felt like what made the movie great is that it's not just fan service. And it's not just nostalgia. In fact, it's not... Like, there are stretches of this movie where there's not a lot of, like, nostalgia. You know, like, it's not just bombarding you with nostalgia. Like, they could have gone the route of, like Sigourney Weaver could have been forced into this movie.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like, the original Ghostbusters could have been forced into this movie, and the movie could have been... had a lot of those moments, you know, like they could have, Rick Moranis could have showed up. Like, it's none of that. And it's not like, I mean, Annie Potts shows up at the beginning as the real estate agent. Okay. You know, it's her character, but like, that's fine because there's a reason for that. Like
she's in and out. Like it's not even,
she's in and out
in such a way.
Yeah. And there's also a reason for her to be there. It's not just a useless cameo. Like she's responsible for that because like, she's like the only person that I guess gave a crap, right? About Egon, which, okay, that makes sense.
And that last scene, the post credit scene kind of helps pay that shit off as well.
Absolutely.
The relationship that they had.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So like they could have done that stuff, you know, but they chose to use like the Sigourney Weaver cameo for like the mid credit scene, which is fun. It's cute. You know, it's not, it doesn't add or detract at all, right?
Dude,
from
she
the story.
Great.
Well, she does, yeah.
She looked great.
Yeah, she's...
I was like, look at you, man, girl. You aging well.
Yeah, she doesn't really look that much different. You know, just,
no, she looks phenomenal.
Like older. Yeah, just a little older. Although,
when are you going to make another Aliens movie?
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is Bill Murray doesn't look that much different either. That's because he kind of always looked like he was 65. Like,
He looks bad.
Well, he's... beaten. I mean he wasn't
he is
gonna,
old as shit, but like,
yeah, he's not a, he was never the type of guy though that like, you know, like was, he was never like a pretty guy that you assume would age really well. Like he was
man.
Yeah, I mean he was more charming than he was like handsome, you know. That's part of the reason why he had you know, some of the issues between him and like Chevy Chase, right? They were two very different types of people. He is, but that's what I mean, like two very different types of people.
Yeah, Chevy Chase, about how he was basically like run out of Hollywood.
Yeah, well,
because of his behavior.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so I'm pumped like you. I'm looking forward to this. Is going to be a movie that I will watch, like. I don't want to say repeatedly, but this is going to be a movie that I'm going to watch. Like when this movie is on, I'm going to watch it. This is a movie that
has
like,
rewatchability.
Absolutely. It has rewatchability. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, it seems like it's doing well, you know, at the box office. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully.
Oh, what's her name is in this movie? Olivia. What's her face? Jason Sudeikis' wife.
Oh.
What's her name? She played Zool.
Yeah, I don't. I actually.
I didn't even like when I saw her. I was like, I know that face. Playing Zool with your little flat top.
That's funny. His name? Kay Cannon was his. Oh, ex- is that who that no, was? That's his ex-wife. You talking about his girlfriend?
No, his girlfriend.
Yeah, the one he's been on the beach with that I've been seeing.
Hold on, Olivia.
In
Wild, Olivia Wilde.
Oh yeah, no, that's not. They're over.
Oh really? Oh.
Yeah, he's hanging out now with someone else. Yeah, Keeley.
I think that
Hazel.
Keeley Hazel.
Yeah,
I think that dude is. I don't think that dude's funny at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's the type of guy.
Oh no, she, there, there's okay.
Mm-hmm. He's the type of guy that with good writing, he's fine. Like he's someone who can deliver lines, but I don't think he like is the type of guy that like elevates material.
No, I don't find him. He's got a kickable face.
Just another. So we got to add him.
Yeah,
to
it's
the,
another.
Oh, one. But he's got a kickable face. Is that different than just a punchable face?
Yeah, I just like him more.
Like a nice front kick. Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Just line it up. Just put it right there in between two cones.
Sweet.
Booyah. Anyways.
Yeah.
Great film. I can't wait to watch it again.
Yes.
If they're going to do like a 30 or 45 day release on VOD.
I'm sure it will. That's we'll
see
like
how fast it goes. Because I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean.
Sony property is probably going to have a rental for like 30 days.
This was a nice, like it's funny because it's, you know, having gone into the movie, you know, one of the things you worry about when you're not seeing a movie on opening weekend is like, you have heard so much about it, like not details, but like hype.
Yeah.
It's like, oh crap. Like, but I managed to still go in with, I don't want to say low expectations, but like I didn't allow all the word of mouth to like have me go in with very high expectations. I still went in pretty even keeled and like, man, this, it really, even if I had gone in with high expectations, I think it still would have exceeded them. Cause I just did not expect to have that emotional experience. Like it's been a while had something like that happen to me.
100%. If you would have told me that at the end of Ghostbusters Afterlife that I would have been crying.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd have laughed at you and I would have kicked you in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't.
I literally did not expect. No. And I'm like, damn, I'm getting soft. But it hit me in the feels, man. It hit me hard. Sure. It hit me hard. Like I couldn't even. I was describing it. That the last scene to Jess, and I was choking up talking about it.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you all right? And I'm like, popcorn kernel from last night. I'm like, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I'm all right. I'm good. And she's like, you're looking a little. I'm like, no, I'm fine.
See, and the worst part is like, you don't have allergies. I do, so I can use that excuse.
I don't have allergies at all.
I can use the, like, it's just those damn allergies, even though there's no pollen. The pollen count is zero.
I was like, you're not going to see it. Let me tell you about what happened. And then, you know, she's got the proton pack, and she's shooting the stream, and she can't control it. And then her grandfather, Egon, you know, remember Egon? He put his hands on them, on her wrist. And then she beat him good. And
then we get to see him. It's not just the hand.
Dude, she's like, wait, Egon? I'm like, don't make me repeat that.
Yeah. I can only tell this story one time.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. That's a moment that's going to resonate probably. I don't know, maybe every time you see it, but that's going to resonate still. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's not a... I mean, yeah, there was an element of, like, surprise, but still, the reasons why I was emotional are still going to be with me, like, every time I watch that now, because it's just, it's that well done. And I mean,
and
I think
it's so good.
And you know, it's interesting. I think that's a big reason, too, for, like, the word of mouth and the success of this movie is, like, you talk about, like, appealing to different generations, right? Because we mentioned this last week, right? How the movie was playing well with, like, the older audience that grew up watching the original and, like, the younger audience, like, as the parents now take the kids to see it. And it's like, you know, that moment is a great example of, like, because the kids can relate to the kid, right? Mm-hmm. You relate to that girl and her journey and her experience and, like, her getting to meet with, like, with her grandfather and stuff like that. But, like, us as adults, like, we're going to relate to that in the opposite direction, right? Like, we're relating to the whole, like, you know, the grandfather side of it, right? And you know, relating to that. And you know, in some ways, this movie, to me, has that, like, you know, like Toy Story 3, right? I know it's a weird example, but, like, at the end of that movie, I was a mess. And I was a mess because it's taking a theme, you know, that I could, you could relate to, right? That whole theme of, like, growing up, right? And finally having to, like, say goodbye to, like, your child and stuff like that. And so in some ways, like, this movie, like, the themes are, like, as an adult now, like, you're relating to, like, the kid inside of you, like, getting to, like, you know, you see their grandfather again, or you get to, like, that whole thing, man, that appeals to such a wide range of humans, you know, young, old. It's just, it was so well done. Say it enough.
There's a thing that I think about a lot since my dad passed away, which is this idea of, like, helping me, right? Like, when I'm going through a tough time or I've got a challenge, I think about my dad.
Yeah.
Because I want the support. I'm like, you're on the other side. I need a little push. I need a little help. I think we all feel that. I think we all have that with somebody that we were close to that may not be with us anymore. We're looking for a little bit of support, a little bit of aid, like something that kind of, like, a little extra push. And, like, that seeing that manifest in the film, like, that's what did it for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's that connection. It's like, you know, she's got that support, and he looks at her with, like, such love.
Yes.
Which is the thing that, like, just, like, knocked it out of the park for me when it comes down to the CGI, because, like, that expression was real. Like, that felt really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't like, oh, that's, like, that's a weird actor. Like, I'm, oh my God, that looks so weird. Look at his face. It's, like, melting at once. Like, that didn't even do it. I was like, oh my gosh, that is so good.
Yeah. Like, it's not just like an emotionless hologram, you know, type thing. It's different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, obviously, again, like I said, Harold Ramis passed away some time ago. Bringing him back in that capacity and still having a role in this film in that way was perfect.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's his, it's really, like, him and the granddaughter, Phoebe, it's their story.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just kind of there to fill in the gaps and move the story along and whatever. But, yeah, it's, really good stuff. Also good stuff is Hawkeye, which dropped its first two episodes this past week. It's only a 6-episode series, so it's short. So this, you know, hopefully it's going to be a nice, tight little story here. But so far so good with this. I enjoyed these first two episodes. I enjoy where things may be headed. You know, with this, and I mean, it's still getting going, you know. Yeah. I know, like, Ron Diesel, he said, like, he liked it, but, like, you know, he thought it was, like, a little slow to develop. And I feel like that's, like, a lot of people's opinions when it comes to most of these Disney Plus Marvel shows so far.
First, like, episodes are always, like, the ones that they're like resetting you into, like, here's what this character's been up to, here's how they're feeling.
Yeah, because
and now let's like ramp it up a bit.
Yeah, they have to.
By, like, episodes 3 and 4 is where they start to, like, crank. It happened with Loki.
Yes.
Loki picked up, like, third or fourth episode. Not that it was slow.
Right.
But, like, that moment where they get into Rock's, I think it was, like, what was it? Rock's, the Mart, where he thinks they've got the Loki, and then all of a sudden it's revealed that she's jumping from body to body. Like, that's the point where it, like, it ramps up.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's I mean, you know, again, I'm trying not to get too deep, you know, go down the rabbit hole here too deep, you know, with the Mephisto type stuff, you know, because there's a lot of theories about characters that we may be seeing, and people have picked up on certain Easter eggs and things like that in the episode that may hint at certain things and whatever. But like,
I'm not even doing.
No, that. I mean, I
so not even involved in that.
Right. There are right things now that would certainly make sense, you know, mm-hmm. that by the end of this show that could be like a reveal type thing. I think, but yeah, I mean, ultimately this is a story of it's a pretty simple story. Right. And you mm-hmm. know, we'll see how it ends. We'll see where the characters are by the end of this. And if Kate Bishop is officially going to be like the new Hawkeye and how that's going to play out.
She's great.
She is. Yeah.
She's great. I love the dynamic there.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, man. So in the beginning of that, of the beginning of the first episode, we were watching. Well, two things. One, the lineup to Avengers. Like someone did a side by side comparison of like the scene, the opening scene for Hawkeye,
mm-hmm.
and the scene in Avengers where he no look shoots the Chitauri off of the little
yep.
hover thing, and then does the jumping backwards. Shooting grapple, whatever the hell it's called, that move.
Yeah,
do it beat for beat. So that attention to detail, like whoever paid attention to that, kudos to you, because you could have just phoned it in and been super lazy, but like it works.
Yeah,
I loved all of that, and the fact that that is why that's her hero, like because she got to see a hero in real life do right. some shit like that.
Because you would have to like, Drake, really, Hawkeye's your hero? But yeah, it makes sense exactly. in the context of his, yeah,
he like saved you.
Yeah.
Without you even, you know, without him realizing it. I love that. The other thing that I dug was, and it same thing, a real, very, very weird moment, but he's watching the play and he sees Natasha dancing around on stage and it gets real quiet. And like, dude, all of a sudden I'm like, boom, I got hit with like the emotional. I was like, that's right. Damn, I forgot how tight these two were.
Mm.
And like, he's having to relive that, you know, he's seeing her like alive on the stage in some sort of weird moment that's so gratuitous for him. And he's at, like, and I could feel that. And I dug that. I thought that was a nice touch. I like the fact that it kind of, you know, his solitude in that moment felt very real to me.
Yeah.
And it set it up. Who he is and how he's feeling post endgame. So yeah, I'm and you know, again, why he's contributing to all this stuff. I'm on board for it. I thought it was really good. And the fact that, you know, it's going almost beat for beat, for the comic book from the comic. It's, some good stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot. Again, it's only six episodes, so it's going to be interesting to see how. I mean, they don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, it's like 55.
Because you know, you still have Yelena, right? That we haven't seen, right? She's going to start to factor in somehow, right, into this. And you got the stuff going on with, what's her name? With the with Jack, right? Duquesne, who's like. You assume is going to be the swordsman, right?
Mm-hmm. Played brilliantly by Tony Dalton.
Tremendous.
So good.
Yeah. Fantastic. With a magnificent mustache. You know, and all of that stuff. And so it's like, well, where is that, some of that stuff heading? And you know, again, of course, the tracksuit mafia thing. And
bro.
Yeah. Bro. And we got to see, you know, some Echo stuff, and which that's going to be a series too down mm-hmm. the road. So like, there's a lot that's going to be packed in, we think, here.
Yeah.
But they still have a specific story that they have to tell at the same time. So, it is going to be interesting to see.
I love the, again, some of the attention to detail and this idea, like, you know, these heroes have infiltrated pop culture.
Yes.
All of the stuff, you know, like, in the life that they have to live after all of that stuff has happened. So, like, even the stuff that we saw in Falcon and the Winter Soldier where, you know, he's trying to get a loan and they're like, I know who you are, man. Like, can I get a selfie with you? Like, guns out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. You know, people are really like that.
Yeah.
So I like the world that we're living in right now.
And it's also nice. It's nice to see because, you know, they have the luxury because they have the shared universe, right? And it is all one giant arc, right? Where, you know, they can really explore how some of these major events have affected the world or their little universe, like whatever, you know, they're focused on at the time, right? So it's like the Avengers didn't happen, and then it's just like, okay, that's it. Like that whole battle, you know, of New York happened, and like that was it. Now we move on to the next thing, right? Like there's still things, right, that are coming. There's fallout from that. You know, like the whole Infinity Saga, right? That finger snap. I mean, that wasn't just like, all right, now we're on to another set of movies. So like, yeah, that was a big thing. But like, no, like we're still seeing the effects of that. Like it's, the stuff carries over and how, like, I mean, just like the whole Avengers, the musical thing with Steve Rogers, and it's like, like, yeah, like, that's weird. Like, that's kind of something you could see happening.
100%.
You know, I mean, like...
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
You know?
They've got musicals about 9/11.
Sure.
You know? So, totally. And what I like is, you know, these are, from the perspective of both Sam and Clint, these are normal people. These aren't, like, super-powered folks.
So, right.
So they still have real-world problems that they have to deal with.
Yeah,
they're not billionaires. They're not, you know, super soldiers. It's like they're dealing with real shit. I like the fact that, you know, he's like losing his hearing, and then she asks him, "Oh, how did that happen?" And he kind of goes through all of the moments where he's been knocked around and beaten up and stuff like that. Like that's really cool. You know, his body does is taking a toll on his body.
Yeah, and we're getting a little bit of an idea of like what was going on during his Ronin time period.
That's right.
Too,
that's
which.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, there's only so much that you could focus on, but that's something that we haven't seen much of, and clearly it's had a major effect, right, on his life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the interesting things about this character, and it's you know, we haven't really had much of a chance to live with him, is that, you know, of all the Avengers, like, he's the one that, like, has, like, the family that we can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's got the wife and the kids and the little, you know, farmhouse and all that stuff. And, you know, he's not a mutant or a superpowered thing or whatever. Like he's not.
He's a family man.
Yeah, he's a family man. And he's very different from the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting dynamic that, you know, I think could set the character apart. Now, I don't know how much longer he has, you know, in this universe, but. It does add an interesting wrinkle to...
Even his motivations for being there for Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, he's lived 5 years without his family.
Yes. Right.
You know? That's why he wants to spend the time with his kids. But then ultimately, you know, his sins are facing him in the face.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm on board. For better or worse, because I continue to adore the crap out of these Disney Plus shows.
Yeah, I mean they've been mostly hit for me. I mean I there hasn't been one of these shows, and you know we could throw The Mandalorian too in there as well. Like that hasn't worked for me on at least some level.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've all been good. They've all been good. They've been a little different, you know.
Yeah.
Because obviously. Hawkeye doesn't look and feel like Loki or, you know, which didn't look and feel like Falcon and Winter Soldier, which didn't look and feel like WandaVision, you know, and obviously
right.
What If was, you know, an animated thing, so it was going to clearly have its own look and feel, but
you're picking up the solo issues of these characters who are written by a different team of people that wrote for the Avengers, you know, the group.
Yeah.
The team ups, and it's illustrated by different people,
yes.
You know, who are doing different runs, and so like that's I appreciate that approach to all of this.
Yeah, my one hope is that, and I know it's different franchise, different creative team and everything, but like my only hope is that all of these Star Wars shows that are coming out can have a similar, can follow suit in the way that like they all have their own feel. Right. and not, I mean, they still should feel like Star Wars, but mm-hmm. like, just like how The Mandalorian kind of has a unique feel within Star Wars, but it's still right. very much Star Wars at the same time. Like, I would hope that maybe they kind of follow along in that type of, in that way.
Well, so long as Dave Filoni and John Favreau have anything to do with anything, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Yeah. And, of course, I guess we'll say today, as people are, we're recording this on Sunday night, so as people are listening to this, it's probably Monday, Spider Monday, which the tickets will go on sale now for Spider-Man No Way Home. I am starting to think that this might be another rare occasion for me where I actually go out and maybe check this out Thursday night. Either that, or I'm going to check it out very early, like as early as I can on Friday morning, because I don't know that I don't want to have to avoid spoilers for forever. Yeah. And this just, the way they've built this up, like, this is going to be, I think, this is going to be like a spoiler-heavy type of movie. And I want to go in as fresh as possible. So I'm debating. I'm going to take a look and see tomorrow, see what it looks like.
Dude, I just checked my theater and I have showtimes up already.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, they would. They got to already have that stuff ready. So.
December 16th, Thursday. Yeah, they're there.
Yeah.
I'm like, do I see this at 7 o'clock in the evening? No.
Yeah, that's the only holdup. I mean, 3D? I guess if I...
Ugh, I don't want to see movies.
Is that
3D
still a
anymore.
Thing?
That is still a thing.
Wow. All right.
That is very, very much a thing. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm with you. Got to see it as soon as possible. I don't know about that Thursday show. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. But I'll tell you what, though. I've had it up here with Spider-Man No Way Home and all of the speculation and potential leaks and did you see this and the goblin that and blah, blah, blah. I don't get, you know what? Shut up. Let's watch the movie. Let's get it over with. It's going to be great, hopefully. Knock on wood. Fingers crossed. Don't walk under a ladder. Watch out for that black cat. It. That's what I did there. Let's just do it, man, because I'm tired of it. I'm getting tired of it. It's Mephisto level. We're at Mephisto level. Everyone, oh, did you? Oh, I heard about this guy. Oh, did you hear? Shut up. Let's watch the movie. I'm over it. I'm over it. I'm so excited for it. There's nothing anything anyone's going to say.
Yeah,
I just
want to
see it. That's
right.
My hype meter is already up.
Like, I don't need to. I'm with you. I don't need to see or hear another thing about this movie. I
don't need another trailer.
No.
Do you need a trailer? I know there's lots of talk that there's a trailer is going to drop today, Monday, whenever you guys are listening to this. I hope a trailer does not drop because there's no need for a trailer. Hype
right.
levels are already there.
Yeah.
You know, what else can you show us?
I feel like it's like if you've gone this far, right, without revealing what people assume is left to reveal, then why not just stick it out? It's a couple of weeks at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you have like a quick 30-second TV spot that just reuses trailer footage of that.
Yeah.
Cool. We don't need anything else. Let people's minds run crazy. Oh, there's only 5 villains. There has to be a 6th somewhere. Is it the Vulture? Is it Venom? Is it what's his face? I almost said Morpheus. And I almost said Morbius. Mephisto? No, not Mephisto. What's his name? Damn, bro.
You're talking about
Jake Gyllenhaal's character?
Yeah, Mysterio.
Mysterio. Too many M's. yeah, I don't know. I don't care. Let's just watch it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm just, it's been a lot of hype and a lot of, you know, isn't it like, what's this? And yeah, I'm good now. I just want my tickets and I want to sit down and, I want to sit down, like I said, with as fresh a head as possible. I don't want to know anything more. I know enough. You know, again, like you said, they didn't have to sell me on this now. They really never had to sell me on it. Like, I was in the minute that they announced its existence, right?
Yeah.
But especially now, there's just no reason to keep going. So, yeah, I'm in the same boat. I just hope I can get past this the next few weeks as things probably start to leak out and, you know, whatnot.
Oh, my gosh.
You know.
I saw something post. Someone's like, oh, did you see this marketing material? It's got this person's head. I'm like, forget it.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm not even. Oh, look, it looks like so-and-so. Kind of looks like an elbow or a spider butt cheek. I don't know. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. If he's in it, if they're not in it, I don't know. I don't care. Let's just watch it. Spider-Man, Spider-Verse, Multiverse, Doctor Strange. I'm on board. Let's go. Multiple villains. Sure. I've seen how that works out too. That's not always the best. So hopefully this thing doesn't crush itself under the weight of expectations.
Yeah.
Which is a very real thing.
Sure.
You know, all of this hype and people going in and being like, holy shit, Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire were not in this movie. Oh my God, what happened? Missed opportunity, Sony, you suck. F you, Marvel. Can't wait for all that.
Right.
When the fandom just eats itself alive.
So are you saying that you're actually hoping that Maguire and Garfield are not in the movie?
I'm just seeing, like, if stuff does not happen in the, you know, to the liking or to the expectations of what people are setting it up to be, they're going to be on, like, everyone's going to lose their mind over it. They're going to lose it if it happens, and then they're going to lose it if it doesn't happen.
Right. I mean, you don't want to set yourself up to the point where you're expecting so much that, like, even if they deliver like 75% of what you're expecting, like, you don't want to get to a point where, like, just because you didn't get 100% of it, you're going to be upset.
Right.
You know, like, right. That's, you know, like, just so, for example, like, if you think that Garfield and Tobey Maguire are going to be in it and that, you know, we're going to see Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock and we're going to see the Kingpin and we're going to see Venom, right, and whatever in this movie and all that. Like, if you get Maguire and Garfield but don't get any of those other things, like, you shouldn't be upset by that, you know?
Yeah, but Chris, but I saw Venom, let there be carnage.
I get it. That's the part. Yeah, you don't want to set yourself up for that.
I mean, ultimately what's going to happen. You're going to be like, oh my God. And when, you know, the Vulture doesn't, where's the Vulture? You know, Vulture's supposed to be in jail and then he meets up with Morbius and eating themselves alive. This is the part where I'm like, fandom, you suck. You suck. Yeah. Can we just like a thing and just leave it? Stop obsessing over it.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's what it is.
It's the social media aspect of it, is that if you're, you know, you're going on there every day, then you got to have something to talk about, right? And something to investigate and to dig into. And, you know, this stuff is juicy. It's fun, right? Because, again, we're in uncharted territory in that, you know, this is, you know, these are conversations that we never would have had.
Right.
10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. You know, the idea that, like, hey, you know, one day you might see, you know, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker and Spider-Man or whatever back in this, you know, it's like, what? No, well, that can't happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, we never, there was a time when we didn't think Spider-Man was going to ever be in the MCU. You know, let alone, like, where we're at right now. So, I mean, it's like, it's fantasy, you know, booking or fantasy, you know, a movie making, but, like, now it feels like it's much closer to reality. So I can see where, you know, people are going to get excited about that for sure. But I'm personally just trying to avoid as much of it as possible because, like I said, I don't want to. I just want to go in there expecting to see the movie that they've already sold me. And then anything else that happens will be like a bonus.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how I want to go into it.
The thing that gets me super excited about this film, villains and shit aside, is the multiverse, is actually seeing everything that that's been set up in Loki kind of come to fruition.
Right.
I mean, that's altered. This is Shang-Chi did not touch this stuff. Black Widow obviously did not touch any of this. Hawkeye is not touching any of this. What if, you know, did. But, like, this is the first real, like, live-action multiverse MCU theatrical thing that we're getting that is going to tackle the multiverse.
In specific terms.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, because you might see, let's just say, okay, theoretically, you know, let's say that the Kingpin does show up in Hawkeye, right? But it's not the Kingpin that...
was in the Marvel shows.
Right, that's in the Marvel shows. Well, so then that's... But maybe, let's just say it's Vincent D'Onofrio playing the character, but it's still meant to be a different Kingpin. Like,
yeah, I mean, a Loki is a Loki.
Correct. You know, right? Like that whole concept. Like, is it that or... You know, like, so, I mean, there's... So you can still get it, but yeah, this movie is going to... Actually, that's just a circumstance. This movie's actually going to be tackling the multiverse as a concept.
Yeah, and the fact that with these villains in our mind's eye, right, like in the way that we're kind of expecting this to be, like, you know, this Doc Ock is the Doc Ock from the Raimiverse, right? It's not a variant version that ultimately becomes a Doc Ock. It may be, but I'm going to just say that it's, you know, it's the Raimiverse Doc Ock. And it's the Raimiverse Green Goblin. And in the fact that we're able now to do that, which means now we're folding franchises into one another, that's mind-boggling shit. I mean, that's the stuff that's getting people crazy.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, that's the thing that's like, I'm sold. That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
who pops up.
And not only that, but, you know, so Doctor Strange obviously is in this movie too, and his next movie is in the Multiverse of Madness. Which is going to supposedly just blow the doors off the whole thing. And it's going to also incorporate Scarlet Witch, which ties into everything we saw at the end of WandaVision. And so it's like, this is the beginning of whatever that's going to be, right? Whatever that's leading to. And you know, and the other thing is we're going to see it on the DC side as well, too, with Flash and like...
The Batman.
Yeah, and that's exciting, you know, and what kind of doors that's going to open up for... You know, the future of the franchise and of that series of movies and stuff, and so yeah, I mean it's a fun time. You know, it's like we've gone in stages with these like superhero or comic book movies, right? It's like you know, there were good superhero movies before the MCU became a thing and before, you know, all Blade. That, right? Yeah. Well, even going back further than that, right? I mean, because like Raimi's Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 were good movies, right? At the time, anyway. And, you know, I mean, obviously Superman the movie and stuff like that and Batman 89 and all that. You know, so we've had these good movies that have come out. But the MCU was the thing that really raised the bar in the sense of, like, I mean, Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy... Like, from an artistic standpoint, kind of raised the bar. But, like, the MCU from a comic book storytelling standpoint raised the bar, right? Created this giant shared universe, made itself its own thing, its own genre. And it's like, you know, now here we are, and they're taking it now to... Then we had the big event, right? So now you had the Avengers was like, now it's an event movie. And now you had the Infinity Saga, which like now it's not just a shared universe, but now we're like building to something gigantic, like a big comic book event. And it's like now with the multiverse, it's like now... Not only are we getting really high quality like comic book movies and superhero movies, but like we're now entering a new phase of this where it's like they're also becoming very comic booky, and very like where now we're getting concepts because now the general audience has been conditioned long enough to understand this stuff and these characters and everything. And so it's like, now we're getting real geeky. It's like, now we're getting multiverses and all of this stuff. So
cosmic,
it's like,
you know, power cosmic and all that.
Yeah. Like stuff that's like, now this is the net, like, you know, it didn't start out that way, but now we're getting into this type of stuff. And I mean, it's like, it's really
cool.
Can
you imagine, can you imagine something like the talking about multiverses or even, oh, this power cosmic force and, you know, stuff like the Eternals, which again is definitely not for everyone's palate, but you know, some of the stuff explained there is like wild stuff that I don't think, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we would have gotten at all.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, and even like the idea of replacing characters that happens in the comics, right? But like mainstream audiences don't necessarily realize that, right? To like, if you're not a comic reader or you're just like a mainstream fan, like you don't realize that like there were times when Bruce Wayne was not Batman. You don't realize that there were times when Steve Rogers was not Captain America, and that, you know, and Tony Stark was not Iron Man, and so on, right? Like you don't know that. And you know, there were times when Peter Parker, and forget Miles Morales, like there were times when Peter Parker wasn't Spider-Man and thing, and then you did the clone thing and all that wackiness. And it's like, you know, like that type of stuff is now starting to trickle into these movies. Like we're replacing characters, you know, like we're going to, you know, you're going to have a new Captain America, you know, you're going to have a new
Black Panther.
Exactly. You know, new Hawkeye, new Black Panther. I'm sure at some point we're going to have a new Iron Man, you know. You may have a new Spider-Man at some point, you know. So, like, things like this are happening, and it's like now we're getting really – and it's because of all the groundwork that was laid over the last whatever, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever it's been. Like, now we're at this point where people can be far more accepting. Like, you can't throw these concepts out at people, like, right away.
Right.
You know, it's just it's not going to work.
Christopher Nolan totally skipped over the idea of a Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that wouldn't have fit. I mean, it's unusual that
he was creating, but that the idea that he couldn't tackle some of that stuff and went for a more grounded approach, right? It plays more to his sensibilities as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you
if
wonder,
we were to make a Batman film now.
Sure.
When you talk about a Lazarus pit, you're going to be like, okay, that's cool. That works for me.
I mean, you wonder why, like, if he was going for that grounded approach, like, he would even decide to choose, like, Ra's al Ghul as his villain, one of his villains. Because
he's like, I'm going to pick one of the most supernatural characters. I'm just going to dumb him down.
Right. Because, like, I mean, I get that it tied into the whole concept of, like, Gotham. And like fighting for the soul of Gotham and all of that, and whether Gotham is irredeemable and all. I get that part. But like, it was an interesting choice when you really think about it. Because a lot of what makes that character interesting was not like a part of the character. And a lot of what makes the dynamic between that character and Batman so interesting in the comics and stuff was gone too. Because they also... they merged it together with like the Ducard character where they like he was a mentor as well to Bruce Wayne.
Right.
So it's like, you know, they did shift a lot of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, now, you know, all bets are off. I mean, you could pretty much, as long as you've educated your audience, like your general audience, like the mainstream audience, to some of these things, like then you can start opening things up. That's why I'm not a fan of just like throwing a lot of things out at people like very, very quickly, because you have to bring people up to speed on that stuff or else it's going to be jarring and it's going to be weird for them, you know?
I mean, that's part of that is Marvel's teasing of Skrulls, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if everyone saw Captain Marvel, which obviously Skrulls played a huge role in it, but. You know, I think we're going to start to get a lot more of that because it's going to be leading up to some other stuff.
Yeah.
Or it's just going to be like, you know, the show.
It could be.
Yeah, the Secret War stuff.
Yep.
Who knows? But, you know, they're sprinkling a lot of stuff in there to go, okay, we're starting to get you guys ready for what's next. And they're going in a couple of different directions. And they're using a lot of their sort of baseline foundational heroes to set up some of the new direction that they're going in.
Yeah.
For these next phases. So it'll be interesting. to see how crazy this shit gets, and or if it becomes just too much for people and overkill.
Well, it might, but you know, I think it's a good way to do it, because I feel like when you have a franchise that's gone on now as long as this Marvel franchise has gone on, you know, it's important to know like what your strengths are at the time, right? So when they first started the MCU, like, they identified that their strength was going to be the shared universe,
mm-hmm.
right? And getting people invested in that and building to the Avengers. And then they kind of rode that for a while, right? And yeah. Now that we're here, then they realized that, okay, they could pay off all of those, that history with the Infinity Saga.
Right.
And everything building to that. And now that's over. So now they're going to have to identify, well, what's our strength right now, right? We don't have Robert Downey Jr., right, as Tony Stark. We don't have Chris Evans as Steve Rogers. Like, we're moving away from that. So what's our strength? And it's like one of their strengths is now they can take advantage of the fact that they have developed a loyal following of people that have never read comics, right? That have never played the video games, never done any of that stuff. You know, maybe they've watched some cartoons or whatever, but like, and they are now fully invested in this. They're invested mm-hmm. in the brand. They're invested in the characters. They're invested in the you know, mixing up all the different characters. So like, well, let's use that to our advantage now. And we're going to use these multiverse concepts and get these bigger concepts. And also start to incorporate some novelty things. Like, let's, you know, bring in past Spider-Man that, you know, those movies made a ton of money. People are familiar right. with that. Like, so like that's their strength now that they need to be building on, right? Mm-hmm. Is mm-hmm. the trust and the loyalty of the audience to establish new characters, right? Like Shang-Chi and the Eternals and all that. But yeah. also the ability to know that your audience is invested and they've watched your Disney Plus shows and they've seen right. your movies. And so when you start to do multiverse concepts and things like that, like, they're not going to be lost, you know, like they would have if you tried to do this like as your fourth movie ever, right. you know, in your franchise. So it's really about identifying your strengths as a franchise and working off of that. And I think Marvel Studios has done an amazing job of identifying their strengths and building off of that, you know, for long stretches of time, which, you yeah. know, is why they've been so successful and why, you know, like, Sony has had problems, right? Because what is Sony's biggest issue? Which is just they were never focused, right?
Right.
Like, they had a right. Spider-Man franchise and then they pulled the plug on that. And then because they had a, you know, a movie that made a ton of money, but people didn't like. And right. then they rebooted it and went in a very different direction with it. And then they yeah. were going to do a shared universe with that. But then people didn't like those movies, so they gave up on that. But it's like they still want to do their villain movies and stuff and keep their foot in the Spider-Man thing. So they, you know, it's like they've been completely unfocused. They've had no direction. They have not said, like, hey, what's our strength? You know,
right.
you know, and they should have said, like, well, our strength is, you know, Spider-Man, and we have an A-list character, and we're going to build a proper universe around him, but we're going to build it around Spider-Man himself, right? Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. whole idea. And you know, they could have very easily done this on their own, you know, in a sense of, like, they could have had this, you know, they could have made, like, a live-action movie that would have been, like, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Right.
You know, if they had identified their strengths and what they had as characters, and they could have built to something like that too, where they could have had the movie where Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire come back and interact with a Miles Morales and they fight, you know, like that could mm-hmm. have been their mm-hmm. thing, but they just were too busy trying to reboot things and follow Marvel and all that stuff. And it just went awry. And so, yeah. And now here we are.
Chomping at the bit.
Yeah. Getting ready to buy tickets.
Getting ready for this.
It won't let me buy them right seriously. Now.
No, it just says
error.
We'll be available soon.
Oh, yeah. No, on my app, I'm getting like an error. It's showing me the times, and then it's letting me go to the screen where like I can get the, but then it's like when I try to add the ticket to my cart, I'm getting like an error. So.
Let's see if I can, I just saw. Let me see if I can buy these. Oh yeah, reserve seating. Here we go. Let's do that. I'm gonna give it a shot. We'll see what AMC Theater says. Oh, I'm sorry. No show times are found. Sorry.
No good.
Darn. Yeah. Well, folks, I hope you guys all got your tickets.
Yep.
You know, we're going to be probably talking about Spider-Man for the next... No, we're not talking about Spider-Man anymore after this. No, I'm kidding. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the big question is going to be... You know, so let's just say right now for everybody listening, I would recommend that you go see Spider-Man opening weekend. Because, first of all, if you care about avoiding spoilers, because it's going to be impossible, and you,
yes.
I'm going to tell you right now, there's no way we're going to do a spoiler-free review of this movie, you know, on that opening weekend, because there's just no point. It doesn't seem like that's going to even be possible unless we just say, yeah, well, we liked it or we didn't like it, and now we're going to, you know, we'll talk more about it next week. That's just, that's not going to happen. So,
yes, exactly.
Curious to see how much it makes. I have a feeling.
I'm like I said, I've said this before. This is going to be the thing that that surprises people. I think in terms of its performance, I think everyone's going to go see it, and they're going to see it multiple times. It's going to be a killer.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like pre-pandemic numbers, I think.
It could very possible. Or well, what we assume a pre-pandemic. See, it's hard to say even at this point what that means anymore, right?
Because
Let's say the movie makes, so right now projections are anywhere from like 125 to 145 million opening weekend, right? Let's say the movie makes 150 million, right? Opening weekend. That's huge numbers, obviously, especially for the pandemic era. But like, can we say that that's pre-pandemic numbers? Because like in pre-pandemic times, if this movie had come out with the same hype and the same everything, like would it have been a $200 million opening weekend?
Yeah, who knows?
You know what I mean? Like it's hard to say. I mean, what we're calling pre-pandemic numbers are like, you know, bigger than what they've been like at this point, right? Because we haven't had a movie even, you know, hit. We haven't had a movie hit 100 million yet, you know. So like any movie that does over $100 million, people are gonna say, oh, look, it's pre-pandemic numbers. And it's like, well, maybe.
I mean, here's the baseline. If it ends up doing better on its opening weekend than the second movie did, then Far From Home does, then you're talking about pre-pandemic.
Right. That's
right. So if it ends up making more money than Far From Home on its opening weekend, then that's, I'd say, okay, that's where we are.
And again, it's a different type of movie in that sense. Cause like, I almost feel like this movie, it's a bigger story, right? Almost has a little bit more hype. I think Far From Home benefited a lot from being the post-Endgame movie, so just in case, just for reference, since you threw that out, let's see. So Far From Home opened on a Tuesday because it opened on July, like Independence Day week.
Right.
So it did $93 million on the traditional 3-day weekend, but it did $185 million from its 6-day opening. Because, you know, it opened on a Tuesday. Spider-Man Homecoming did $117 million in its opening 3 days. So I think we can then, it's safe to say that if this movie does, even if it falls in the range that they're
like
projecting,
120.
If it's in the 125 to $145 million range, then yeah, I think we can then say, yes, that's pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic
numbers.
Yeah.
And probably, you know, pre-pandemic it would have done, it still, I think, might have done even more, but, and who knows, maybe it will. I mean, maybe this thing will just completely blow the doors off because this is the event movie that, like, everybody's been waiting for.
That's right.
That hasn't really happened yet, you know. I mean, there have been some bigger movies that have come out, but this one is the first one that really feels like an event. like where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, I'm sitting here waiting for the minute the tickets go on sale to buy them. And that's the first time I've done that. Like, I mean, I've bought my tickets always, you know, in advance for the movies that I've seen during this year, but like, it's not like I'm tomorrow morning, I'm getting up and buying my tickets. Like, that's an event.
Yeah.
So, you know, and even the fact that I'm considering maybe going Thursday night tells you that, you know, again, that's not a thought that I've had in a long time. So for, at least for me, my mentality is very much this is the first movie where I have like a pre-pandemic mentality in that sense, mm-hmm. where it's like, I feel this as an event film and I'm reacting to it like an event film. Like I'm thinking about going to see it early. You know, I'm thinking about getting my tickets early, like all of those things I would have done like pre-pandemic, you know, before we forgot what going to the movies was. I think you know, maybe we will be in for a surprise. Maybe it will really do pre-pandemic numbers.
Oh, we shall see.
Yeah.
I'm anxiously waiting to see how it does. So.
Right. First see how it is, then see how it does, right?
Yeah. First. Got to watch it first.
Yeah.
Priorities.
It's funny because all this talking about it and stuff, like I just was like, oh, I guess, you know, reviews will start coming out because it's opening this weekend. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. We still have like a few weeks to go. Like it just feels like it's never coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So on that note.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. Get out of here. And you can go to thefanboygarage.com and check out all of our things. And you can go on the social medias. The Facebook, the Instagram, and the Twitters at the Fanboy Garage. You can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 156 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week with another show, another episode, some laughs, and even more fun. Talk to you guys soon.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.